Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.
This show is part of the Grand Embassy Productions. Gamarjoba, and welcome to the history of Sakartvelo, Georgia. I'm your host, Roberto, and this is Myth 11, Cosmogonic Tales. In today's episode, we will read some cosmogonic tales from Georgia, and then also have a small discussion with Sarah from Rejects and Revolutionaries afterwards. But of course, this show could not run without our wonderful Patreon members who consistently support us month to month to make sure that we can keep the podcast going. Give it up for John Eric, Vivek Dandekar, Daniel Boline, Gracie D., Konstantina Megdilishvili, David Montgomery, Quinn Campagna, Emily Bivona, Hal the Legionnaire, Hallie Kuntz, Eric Nicholson, Mitchell Dutt, and Andrew Schneider. You are all amazing, and thank you for everything that you do to support the show. Also, we will be doing an AMA for episode 50. Feel free to send in questions about anything you'd like to know to thehistoryofsakartvelo.georgia@gmail.com, with the subject being AMA. You can also DM me in socials asking questions, just put AMA in the beginning of the message. Or you can become a Patreon member at the $5 or up tier, join our Discord, and ask it there and chat with other listeners at the same time. As a forewarning before we continue on with our readings, these stories come from the book Georgian Folk Traditions and Legends, which was bought when I was in Georgia, and is compiled and forwarded in notes by E. Vitsaladze, and translated by D.G. Hunt. So E being Elena Ritsaladze, who was a Georgian professor and folklorist. And the British scholar David Hunt is also the one who translated it from Georgian to English. Now, of course, these are tales that I'm just putting out there. Any notes that you read are from Elena Ritsaladze. So that is what I will be reading, while Sarah is the one who will be reading the story herself. I hope you enjoy, and thank you. Story 1. About the Devs, Nine Suns, and Nine Moons. Dev comes from the Sanskrit Deva, Greek Deus. At first it appeared as a general name for a deity, in part the deity of light. In Persian literature, Daiva is already one of the demons of Ahriman. In New Persian, Div, demon, the helper of Ahriman, formed into a bad character. The number 9, side by side with thrice repeated, one of the most favorite numbers in a Georgian magic tale. The nine-headed dev, nine-eyed sun, nine brothers, beyond nine mountains, etc. Buchukuri is a surname distributed among the mountain people of eastern Georgia, in Hevsureti and Mitioleti. Gogia is a given name, an abbreviation of George.
There used to be devs living, as it happens, O my daughter. There were many of them. Of people, there were few. The devs used to devour the people. The people begged to God. why indeed do you wipe out us Earth people who believe in you while you increase the numbers of the devs? And God brought in 9 suns and 9 moons for the struggle with the devs, but he did not get the better of them. Then he dried up the waters. The devs were walking in the mountains, made burning hot by the heat of the 9 suns, and they were killing the people. There was no water. It got dark, but there was just no water. By the light of the 9 moons, the devs were trembling with the cold. They gradually became fewer and fewer. The devs became weaker and disappeared, and the people became free. The people began to multiply, and meanwhile, very few of the devs were left at all. Also, the places frequented by them became fewer and fewer. The devs tracked down those who were a bit richer and better. The dev would look at the man. If his shoulders were lean, showing through, he would leave him alone. But if they were a bit thicker, then he would pursue him. There is my neighbor, Buhurki Gogia. The devs often used to pursue him, but he is an astute man, and he used to defend himself against them. He would evade them.
Story 2. The Deer and the Ox in the Vault of Even. In Georgia, a land of the development of agriculture and animal husbandry, the image of the ox is met in many folk songs, tales, traditions, legends, riddles, and proverbs. The Deer's Leap is a Georgian folk name of the Milky Way. According to the folk ideas, the discontinuous regions of the Milky Way are the traces of the Deer's Leap. The continuous regions are the path laid down by the ox.
After creating the world and man, God started thinking about what kind of animal to give the people to help them. He summoned the deer and the ox. He ordered them, "Run. The one who runs across the sky quicker, I will give a reward." The deer galloped off. He flew. He wanted to beat the ox. But from his quick running, the deer swelled and died. He left only his trail in the sky, which is called even today the Deer's Leap. Meanwhile, the ox started walking peacefully, slowly chewing the cud. For a long time he was walking, but nevertheless he did arrive. The ox's trail is also observed in the sky. It is called the Path of the Ox. Now God blessed the ox. He sanctified his neck, and since that time the ox carries the burden of care for man. And man, too, valued this animal. About the ox, they sing in a song, "Ox, who gave you that name? O ox with the beautiful face."
Story 3. From where did the mountains and gorges appear on the earth?
God found that the earth at the creation proved larger than the sky. It turned out that the sky did not fit the earth. It did not cover it. Then the devil advised God, "Squeeze the earth with your mighty hands, and the sky, like a roof, will cover it exactly." And truly, the Creator followed the devil's advice. He embraced the earth and squeezed it. The sky itself settled in its place, but the earth bent from his grip. Here and there, mountains were raised, and in other places were made gorges and rapids, streams and lakes, seas and oceans.
Story 4. The Sun and the Moon.
Before the sun, there was nothing else lighting up the world. That luminary was on the earth. One day, God summoned it to heaven. The world was left in darkness. All living things gave way to despair. Only after some time, that luminary, which we now call the sun, appeared in the sky. There was not enough earthly warmth and light for the world, and so the sun and moon appeared. The sun and the moon have one father, but their mothers are different. The moon is younger than the sun. One day, God announced to them that one of them must become the daytime light, that is, the sun, and the other the nighttime one. It is understandable that it was the more pleasant to become the sun. At the appointed time, whichever of the brothers got up earliest, that one will be the sun, and the other the moon. The mothers were forbidden to take a hand in waking up their children. both of them, the future sun and moon, were trying to become the daytime luminary. In order to get up earlier than his brother, the younger one covered his bed with thorns and stinging nettles, and for as long as he could, he tried not to sleep. At dawn, sleep overcame him, and he went sound asleep. But the son lay down in his bed from evening, had a good sleep, and got up early in the morning. He immediately set off to light up the world, and his mother was overjoyed about it. The younger brother himself slept until the time that his mother had already begun to knead the dough for dinner. He awoke, but the sun had already been lighting the world for a long time. The mother became angry at her sleepyhead son, and with her hand, dirtied with dough, she slapped his face. The dark patches that even today are seen on the moon are traces of his mother's hand dirtied with dough.
Story 5. The Sun and a Marten's Skin.
At night, the sun goes down into the sea. In the sea, it swims to the east, and in the morning, it rises into the sky. In the evening, while sinking into the sea, the sun scatters gold all around. At that time, the marten alone is able to withstand being struck by the sun's ray. If, at this instant, a man lowers into the sea the skin of a marten, the skin will get covered with gold.
Story 6. The Moon.
One side of the moon is black, the other one shines. It turns the first side to us during the day, and the second side at night. The turning of the moon is not really well known to anybody. The trout is the first to see the moon, second is the frog, and third is man. The sun and the moon have blessing from above.
Story 7. Thunder and lightning.
If thunder roars, it means that the devs are clashing in the sky. Lightning is the firing of the devs' guns. However, some consider that it is the devils rolling a copper cauldron through the sky that is what is roaring in the sky.
Story 8. Hail.
Hail is blind. The devil guides him. Hail lives in the sky, but from time to time he gets the wish to have a walk through the world. Hail's favorite places for a stroll are the mountains and gorges. When he says to his guide that he wants to take a stroll, the devil raises up a countless number of round, flat ice fragments from the icy crags in the sky. Before departing for a stroll, Hail asks the devil not to lead him close to villages and especially over cornfields. Hail does not want to spoil the fruits of man's labor at all, but the devil deceives him. At first, he leads the blind man over mountains and gorges, but toward the end, he little by little passes over settlements so as to cause harm to man. He assures the blind man that they are floating above the mountains and gorges and that they are not bringing any kind of harm to man. For that reason, in some villages, they ring bells or sing a special song with the aim of staving off the hail. Happy granules go over the gorges. Leader of hail, help us. Creator, help us. Help with your blessing.
Story 9. The Snow and the Rain. Zhdaval is a little bird smaller than a swallow. In Svaneti, they come flying in the summer and build a nest similar to a swallow's on the corners of Svan towers. They are called in Svan, Zhdaval, and the snow is called Shudva.
There were in the world three little Zhdaval birds. One was completely black, the second had a white breast, and the third was all black. In those places to which the white Zhdaval flew, snow lies eternally. If not eternally, then it is for a very long time. In those places to which the white-breasted Zhdaval flew, the snow falls only in winter. Where the black Zhdaval flew, there the snow does not come at all. The snow lives always in the sky. However, much snow falls from the sky. The store is inexhaustible. In the sky, there also stands a lake from where the rain pours.
Story 10. The worlds.
Besides our visible world, there also exist two other worlds settled with people. One is to be found above, and the other below us. So we live in the middle world, and therefore we tighten our belts in the middle of our torso. Meanwhile, the inhabitants of the lower world wear their belts on the thighs, and the inhabitants of the upper one above the waist. In other words, on their chests or on their necks. Our world has existed since very long ago, and will exist as long and longer than the time since its creation.
Story 11. The Separation of the Sky from the Earth. Lavashi is a bread from very finely rolled out dough. Tone is a Georgian bread oven, an earthenware cylinder set into the ground. On its burning hot walls, the bread is baked. With large bakings, the counting is usually made thus. 1, 2, tonne. Or an example in Georgian. Erti ore tonne instead of erti ori sami.
Originally, the sky was so close to the earth that many trees did not have a possibility of growing as high as they do today. And the peasants, driving their bullocks, often brushed against the sky with the end of their whips. Many of the tall people could touch it with a straight arm. At that time, people had the possibility of contact with God and could exchange remarks with him about their needs, and moreover, God was able to fully hear them from heaven. Sometimes even, the people went up to him, straight to heaven itself. The sky ascended to the great height that it is now for the following reason. One day, some woman was baking lavashi, and near her, some little children were romping. Suddenly, a little child soiled itself. The mother, not having any rags to hand, took one lavashi out of the tonne and wiped the baby with it. With such an act, the woman defiled the bread, the main food of man. God became so terribly angry that from that hour he first sent thunder, and during its terrible roaring, he raised the sky to its present height.
Thank you for joining us in our reading. Now let's go on forward to the discussion after these messages.
In his final days, Alexander the Great's generals asked him who should succeed him. Alexander's answer, the strongest. Taken literally, this would see the close of the classical Greek age, an age thousands of years in the making. Join me, Mark Selleck, as I go back to retell the story of ancient Greece in my series Casting Through Ancient Greece. We will cast our way back to its beginnings, all the way through to the spread of its culture throughout the known world, thanks to Alexander and his generals. You can listen and subscribe to the series at www.castingthroughancientgreece.com, or you can listen on your favourite podcasting platform. Don't forget to follow the series over on Twitter at Casting Greece or on Facebook at Casting Through Ancient Greece. I look forward to seeing you there.
Hello and bonjour. My name is Josh Zucker, and I want to take you on a journey through some of the most exciting events of the late Middle Ages. Valois-Burgundy was one of the medieval world's greatest what-ifs. Its dukes inherited, conquered, and politicked their way into forging a state between the German Empire and the Kingdom of France that rivaled them both. From the Hundred Years' War to the Holy Roman Empire, from urban workers to Joan of Arc, and from gallant knights to gunpowder weapons, the Grand Dukes of the West had a part to play in almost all of Western Europe's biggest developments in the 14th and 15th centuries. If you want to learn more about the glamorous rise and dramatic fall of the Dukes of Burgundy, please join me for Grand Dukes of the West, A History of Valois-Burgundy.
And we're back. Thank you, everyone, for hearing us read those cosmogonic tales. I know they were a bit shorter than I thought they would be, but that's what you get when you buy a book from Georgia itself. With me today, you've already heard of them, we have Sarah from Rejects and Revolutionaries. So, Sarah, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Sarah from Rejects and Revolutionaries, a not defunct but on hiatus podcast about 17th century American history and the British context that drove that history. Eventually, I'll get through the whole colonial era, but that is not today.
You're dealing with a different kind of Georgia this time.
In a couple years, maybe.
That's true. Thank you for coming on to the show, and thank you for reading those stories. I'm sure they were very long and riveting.
Yeah, they were really difficult to get through. They were very complicated.
After reading these stories, what were your takes on them officially? Like, what did you think? What were you feeling?
I thought they were interesting. There were, okay, I had two main impulses when I was reading them. The first was, oh, these are not that dark. I've read a lot of Russian folk tales, and in comparison, I mean, these are just so very pleasant and light-hearted and optimistic. And I mean, there's one where I loved when the hail was like, yeah, the hail doesn't mean to hurt people. It just gets tricked into hurting people. And so we have to keep the hail from hurting us by like helping it to know what it's doing, as opposed to like Baba Yaga's in the forest, like, you know. The other impulse that I sort of had, like, immediate reaction was just, I don't know. I mean, they were just sort of statements of how we believe things to have happened. Mm-hmm. There wasn't necessarily any moral to the stories or anything. It was just like, yeah, this is a description of the world we think we live in.
Yeah, and that's what's nice, because as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, for all you listeners out there, these are cosmogonic tales. So essentially, these are tales that relate to the founding of the world, universe, and all that. So it's essentially explaining why things are as they are through nature, what things have evolved from that. Okay, so that first tale essentially being about the Devs, the nine suns, and nine moons. So do you need me to explain what the Devs are?
Okay, I can give you how I interpreted the Devs, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, I think that this maybe exists in a more dualistic religious system where good and evil, maybe they're not exactly equal, but they're kind of equal, and God is good and the Devs are maybe bad. And so there's actually a struggle between God and the Devs. Well, I did have one question that I'll get to in a minute. And so the Devs are kind of devils, but they're not devils in like the Christian worldview. They're devils in more of a dualistic, not quite polytheistic, but dualistic worldview, is my interpretation.
And that would be mostly accurate, because the Devs essentially come from the pagan nature of Georgia back in the day. So you see them a lot in folk tales. They're essentially the ogres that you find in like British folklore and all that.
Okay, so they're not even to the point of being devils in like, say, a Zoroastrian type of worldview. They're
close.
Okay, so they're close.
Because of the Persian influence, they would be close to that.
Okay, but they just don't seem quite as powerful. They're not just like, you know, monsters or whatever. They're just...
It depends on who's telling the tale.
Yeah, that makes sense. I did have something of a question, which is, it was not necessarily clear to me whether the Devs came from God or whether the Devs emerged like alongside God in this. Because it seemed like they were blaming God for creating more Devs. But then it didn't feel like they were necessarily things that were created by God. I don't know. Which is it? I guess that's my question, is like, were they created by God, or were they opponents of God that sort of existed on his level?
Essentially, the Devs are tricky, because it all comes down to the tale that they're in, as it always happens. Because different regions will say, you know, the Devs have always been here. They're created with God, because they're like the Deva in Zoroastrian folklore and religion. So like they're, and because it goes back to the Georgian pagan religion, they're technically part of that pantheon, but they just are there to essentially cause chaos, but they're also seen as like akin to like ogres and stories who are causing issues. So it depends on who you're talking to.
Basically, originally they were co-equal with the good gods, and then as Georgia became Christian, they probably put God, capital G God, above the devs, and so that changing dynamic accounts for the inconsistencies.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, because when you see stories that don't really reference God, it makes more sense that the devs are there as just like, oh, we have to defeat the devs, take them out. But as Georgia became Christianized, and as those stories transformed due to that Christianization, the devs took more of a subservient role to God, but they're still there as like demons, they're a nuisance.
Yeah.
But their power depends on the nature of the story and how strong they actually have to be. For example, like in the story that we saw, the humans are on their last legs, so it takes God having to put up 9 moons and 9 suns to basically kill them all out.
Right.
In like other stories, there's barely any devs left. There's just a few that are running amok, causing issues. Not in the stories that we've read today, but just in ones that I've done in the past. We're like, you have to like save the princess from the dev. You know, they're like the demon that essentially causes issues, or the monster that causes issues. So whenever you need a monster in your story, you bring in a dev and they can take whatever shape or form you need them to take as well.
Right. And do Georgians still tell stories about the devs, or is this more historical thing?
In my experience, not that I've seen. They'll mention like, oh yeah, stupid devy or whatever. But It's more so in the context of like folklore. Same way that, when you tell stories of like dragons and witches, we all know like, oh, you're telling something with a folktale in it. It's similar to the same in Georgia. Like you'll see them a lot in folktales. You'll see like the Georgian Prometheus Amiran. He's always fighting devs, and he actually manages to like cull them down to like remnants, essentially.
Right.
So he's like the Hercules / Prometheus / he's their, demigod that does the thing. But the devs really, they just take the form that you need them to take in the set, in the story. And at least in this story here, they are very much the, we're going crazy killing humans, and it takes God to burn us out, essentially.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting.
No, they're a fun bunch. I really like reading stories of devs. And there's actually a whole chapter in this book that I got in Georgia that is actually just about devs.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So it's like, that'll be, if I keep doing stuff from this book, literally there's, it goes from page 96 to 109, and there's from story 27 to 44.
Wow.
So that's almost, 20-ish stories about the devs.
I'm sure they've been like accumulating them and adapting them and evolving them for, I guess thousands of years at this point.
Absolutely. And it's like a culture as old as Georgia, it's pretty easy to see how that makes it nice and easy to like get it done as well. Like say, hey, the devs are, this is your villain of the story. Why do you need anybody else? They're going to cause mayhem. Here you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you don't have to name them. You can just call them, the stupid devy.
Yeah.
Now, the one I thought this one was really interesting was the second tale, the deer and the ox in the vault of Evan.
Yeah. I thought that one was funny because it obviously called to mind the tortoise and the hare, but sort of with a twist.
What I really liked is that this explains why we have the Milky Way. And it's like, oh, wow, I've never seen a story like that.
Oh, I did not actually quite process that as the Milky Way. That's fun.
Yeah, so what's really interesting is that in some parts of Georgia, the Milky Way is called the Deer's Leap. So essentially when the deer, makes its jump, in the sky, he leaves a trail. And that's his leap, which in turn turns into the Milky Way.
Right. Oh, that's written right above. I just didn't see that.
Oh, yeah, no, you're fine. It's fine. But the viewers don't know that, so.
Yeah, okay.
If you find this book, you probably went to Georgia.
Right, yeah.
So, but no, I thought it was really interesting because then God blesses, you know, it's the ox and the deer. So, of course, you think the deer would win.
Well, I feel like it's a little, well, I mean, the deer died, so whatever. Yeah. But I feel like it's a little unfair that the deer didn't win because he was the one who, you know, stuck to the prompt. The prompt said, go as fast as possible. And he went literally as fast as he possibly could. And the ox was like, eh, whatever. And it's like, that seems unfair. That does. I'm going to stick up for the deer here.
I mean, I feel the same way about the tortoise and the hare story, because the hare could have just finished that race.
Yeah, well, but I mean, in that one, at least it was like the hare's foolishness. Like, the hare was just, I mean, the hare should have just finished and went to sleep afterward, but he didn't bother. But in this one, it's just like, God's like, no, whichever one goes faster will be blessed. And the one that actually made an effort to go fast died, while the other one was very blessed. And I was like,
Well, what would you prefer a lifetime of servitude to humans?
I mean, I feel like the deer wanted that, though. Like,
I think they both wanted it.
The ox didn't seem to care at all. Like, I don't know. The ox was just like, yeah, whatever. And the deer was like, I am going to do this. I find that very unfair.
Absolutely. I mean, to be fair, with my last name, you know, meaning bull, I'm like, I'm kind of on the side of the ox, you know, I'm kind of biased.
Yeah. But just as the story's written is
my opinion. As the story's written, yeah, like the deer did all the work. The ox is, it just died before it was supposed to.
Yeah. Maybe that's why ox servitude is so sort of surfy.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he didn't actually earn the type of servitude that the deer would have earned.
What could the deer do other than just jump around?
I know, that's the problem. And then it's just like, well, then why did you do that anyway? Like, why? Why? Well, because I agree. Away. Yeah.
Well, not much. There's not much of that story. It's just the story of how we got the Milky Way, honestly.
I know. We discussed it for longer than the story was.
Honestly, yeah. The third story, from where did the mountains and gorges appear on the earth? I liked that one quite a bit as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting one as well.
Because you have the devil and God working together.
And it's not even like there was any trickery. It's just like he took a suggestion. But he's not a dev. He is the devil.
But all lowercase, though.
Yeah.
Because God is uppercase, but devil is not.
Yeah, but still. Is that, so it sort of distinguishes it from him being a dev, right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So this is like, even though it's not a devil uppercase D, it's still the devil.
Yeah. Like a demon.
Basically saying, hey, have you tried squeezing it together? Because I'm just assuming that Earth was just, you know, plain as can be.
I know.
And then it's like, oh, let's just squeeze it so we can get everything to fit in the sky. And then that's how you get this story of like, why do we have all those gorges? Why do we have all these mountains? Because like, you gotta squeeze it to make it fit, which Earth's not a perfect sphere, so it makes sense.
Yeah. That was an odd one. It was interesting. Like, I mean, we have stories of the devil and God talking even in the Bible, but it's like in the book of Job and stuff, as opposed to like, maybe that was pre-fall.
That would make sense to me. But, you know, it's also like, hey, I'm trying to help you out with this thing. And I'm like, you know, doubt, but okay, I'll take suggestions. So the next one, the sun and the moon. Basically, this is a longer one.
That one was odd. I liked it a lot more than the deer and the ox, I'll be honest. Like,
oh, yeah, no, absolutely. It's just like, oh, yeah, the sun always woke up on time. It's, you know, the go-getter, and the moon just likes to sleep in.
The moon tried to get up early by staying up late. And I think that's very relatable.
Right?
It did not work. And that is also very relatable. That one has a moral to it. I feel like that one has a moral that is, you know, relevant in 2025.
Yeah. Do not stay up late to get up early. Just go to bed.
I know. Exactly. You know?
And honestly, I remember having to take a flight at like go to the airport at like 3 or 4 a.m.
Yeah, we've all been there. It's like, you know, once you get to like that 3 to 4 a.m., it's do I stay up all night or do I go to bed early. And yeah.
Yeah. My typically I'd be like, I just, you know, not sleep. But then it's like, why would I not sleep?
I know.
Now that I'm older and wiser, I just say, even if I sleep 3 hours, it's better than not sleeping.
Exactly. And I mean, you will have repercussions from not sleeping that'll go beyond the flight. And so, absolutely. Like, yeah, I mean, the moon tried to not sleep and he lost everything. So.
Yeah. And then his mom, you know, with her hands dirtied with dough, just slaps him across the face.
I know. That was funny to me. This I don't know, but isn't it true that part of the moon is always facing the Earth, right? Yeah, I don't think that the spots on the moon actually change with regard to people.
Editor's note, that is correct.
Yeah. And so, you know, that is the dough marks on his hand.
Yeah, so now he has dough all over his face. Guess he never, you know, changed mm-hmm. it. I didn't know that, actually, that it was the same side of the moon that we always see.
Yeah, I thought I remembered that from way back in the day.
No, that's crazy.
I know.
I would not have known that. But yeah, it's basically, this one actually is, I think, out of the 11 we read, has the biggest moral.
Yeah.
Don't stay up late to get up early.
Yeah.
Then with that, the next one we have, well, the next two, we can just discuss them all together because the next three.
Yeah.
They're short. Yeah, the sun and the marten skin.
Oh, yeah, that one, I don't understand.
I didn't understand it much either. Basically, what I got from it is that, you know, only the marten can withstand the sun's rays in the morning.
Yeah, and you can turn them to gold.
Okay, yeah. I think that's, you know, you can use marten skin to get gold. I guess the, because I think martens are like pretty expensive pieces of fur too, right?
Probably.
Yeah, so we can skip that one now.
Yeah.
We don't get it, guys. I'm sorry.
The moon one was really interesting to me because of, and this is why I had that, isn't that true? So close to hand, was because the moon one, again, we're talking about like the rotation of the moon. And it's just like one side of the moon is black and the other shines. But they seem to know that the moon is turning. And that one side stays constantly illuminated while the other does not. I thought that was cool.
No, absolutely. And it's like, yeah, you know, we see both sides. It's just we can't see the other side when the sun's out.
Yep.
Which is, like, understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Thunder and lightning, which is the next seventh one.
Oh, those
devs. I like that because it brings, yeah. And it brings in guns, which is funny because it's like.
Yeah, I wondered about that as well, actually.
Well, because these, okay, so this folktale was just collected in, like, the Soviet era.
Okay.
So, as you mentioned earlier, a lot of them have morphed over time.
Yeah. And, I mean, guns at this point for 400 years, so.
Longer than that.
Yeah.
In some areas. So it's like, yeah, it makes sense that, you know, people consider that guns firing is the same as, like, thunder and lightning.
Mm-hmm. Daleks certainly do.
And then we get to the hail.
Yeah, I like this one. This one was very sweet. I feel bad for the hail.
Yeah, there's even like a little song at the end too.
I know.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, it's like their own like rain, rain, go away song. But instead it's like hail, go away.
Yeah. And it's just like you're helping the hail to know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because it, yeah. And I liked that. I thought that was really, that one was the one that really struck me where it's just like, wow, Georgians are much more optimistic than Russians.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like, no, it's fine, Hale. We know you don't mean to.
Yeah.
Just, you know, let's try to stay your way because it's not your fault.
So we're going to try and help you to not hurt us because you don't want to.
Yeah, it's the devil's fault.
Yeah.
If anything.
Oh, no, it absolutely is. He's the one who tricks the Hale. The Hale is blind. The Hale needs help. The devil pretends to offer help and tricks him into hurting people. And so people have to like step up and say, no, we know that you have good intentions. You're going to hurt us if you come this way.
And so we make some noise to make this save it away, which is always fun.
Yeah.
Then the ninth story, the snow and the rain. I like that because you have like three little birds and like they each showcase like, oh, you know, the white bird, here's eternal snow. Blackbird, we don't have snow here ever. And then like the white and black birds, like we get snow sometimes.
Yeah. The thing that struck me about that one was that like that Folktale actually couldn't happen in a lot of places. Because there's not that many places that are such a compact area that have places with a, like, snow all the time and snow never. You know? Like, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I know, like, in there's like a Midwestern joke where it's like, oh yeah, you know, we have the all four seasons in like a day.
Yeah.
But then it's like, oh no, but in Georgia, you literally just have that across the country. Like,
well, and it, I mean, you have, yeah, you have like, I mean, you have mountains, so you can have some sort of glacial stuff going on. But you also are so far south latitude wise that you're, you know, you have places that are just never going to get snow at all. And so, I mean, it's, well, okay, I was, this goes from something that I'd been thinking of recently, because I was like reading about, well, there was a book I was reading that talked about like the history of ice. And it occurred to me that there are so many people in this world, like in the history of this world, who never saw ice at all. Like, they never experienced ice. They never had any interaction with it. As far as they knew, like, water was water and like vapor, and that was it. And so Georgia, like, has places that could be like that, except for that it's so mountainous that it also has places that don't ever lose their snow. And so I don't know. It's just,
yeah,
there's not that many, just in terms of weather, there's not that many places that folktale could have ever come out of.
No, absolutely. And like, it also just reminds you, like, you have people like who've never seen the ocean.
Yeah.
And like, or like who've never seen like just planes for days.
Yeah. So
it's really interesting to me. So it's a nice little one, and you get some cute birds along with it.
Absolutely.
So, the world's number, which is number 10. That one was weird.
Yeah. I'm gonna be honest. The thing that really struck me on this one is just how terrible the other two belt placements would have been.
We live in the middle world, and therefore we tighten our belts in the middle of our torso. And I'm like, I don't do that.
Well, you don't do it on your thighs, and you don't do it on your chest.
Yeah.
Like, those would be terrible.
Yeah, either way, they're bad. And I'm like, so the middle of the torso, just like the waist? Because like, when I think torso, I'm thinking like,
yeah, the middle, like, of right the below, torso, like, is the, like,
right on my hips.
It's your waist versus your chest versus your thighs.
I mean, some people put their belts on their thighs, but
yeah, and I guess some people put it on their chest as well. But those are both terrible.
Yeah, or chest or on their necks, and I know people who put belts on their necks.
Yeah.
So, oh man, really starting that E rating from this show now. Which I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah. But I mean, I was just in terms of clothes, like holding up your clothes.
Yeah. With just like on your chest or your neck or your thighs. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, I guess you could, but like, that's just bad placement.
It's just bad. It's just bad. Like, those other worlds need to get it together.
For real. Good thing we live in the middle one where we have an insensible place.
And then, you know, you sit there and you're thinking like, okay, maybe we're talking about like heaven and hell and earth, but like heaven sounds a little bit hellish from that.
Right? Like, hell yeah, let's just put your belt on your neck in heaven. And I'm like,
I'm just like, not have any like movement within your, you know, your arms can't move. I don't know. Like,
right.
You're just like, you're kind of stuck if you're.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're kind of insane if your belt's on your thighs, so there's only one reasonable place to live.
And then finally, the last story before we conclude our little chat here today, the separation of the sky from the earth. So this is in direct opposition from like what we had previously with like how the sky was like how the gorges and mountains came.
I know. It was very odd.
Yeah. So it's like, you have a woman cooking lavashi in a tonne. And lavashi being, you know, flatbread, a tonne being like the Georgian baking oven.
Yeah.
It's like this big, like, circular, like, oven. So it doesn't have, like, a top to it. You just,
yeah, it's kind of like a tandoor.
Slap the dough on the side of the wall and just let it cook there.
Yeah, like a tandoor.
It's similar. There's a, like, you know, puri is also the word for bread in Georgia.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, yeah. That makes sense.
So I found this interesting because basically it's like this whole thing about like the sky being close to the heaven. You could touch it with your hands if you were tall enough. So basically, it's like you had like the first floor above you at all times.
Yeah.
And then some woman grabs a lavash bread, wipes her kid's butt with it, and then God gets angry.
I know. Like, that one was very strange. I understand the idea of God getting angry at, like, defiling something that's supposed to be sacred. And I know that bread mm-hmm. sort of has a sacred quality. But yeah, it did seem a little excessive. But the other thing I thought is, like, thank goodness she did that, because it would be pretty terrible to have the sky, like, you know, 7 feet in the air.
Especially now that we have, like, planes and everything.
I know. Like,
yeah, they just have them, like, flying right above you at all times.
I know.
Or, like, birds just, like, squawking, like, above you. Imagine Canadian geese 7 feet above you.
I know.
Or, like, not even 7 feet. Like at least with me, like, a foot above me. I'd be like, that's terrifying. They'd probably swoop down and attack you at all times.
Right. I mean, I know. There's so many logistical errors. Like, logistical issues. Like, if you ever had to carry something that was long, you would not be able to, like, put it up. You know, you'd have to have two people to carry anything that was abnormally shaped. I don't know. Seems pretty terrible.
This is when flat earthers would be like, haha.
Yeah. Squashed so, earthers.
Squashed earthers. There we go. Yeah. That's a new conspiracy theory for you guys. Squashed earthers.
But, like, what was also, I'm sorry, this is kind of weird, but, like, what was the point of that story in particular? I don't know.
The point of the story was how we got our sky to be so high up.
Yeah. It just seems
it's such a weird story.
It's weird, and, like, did anyone ask? Like, I don't know.
No, not really. But you know what? We'll deal with it.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it. This is, like, these are weird little stories I just wanted to get someone on for. I wanted to break in the new Georgian Folks and Traditions and Legends book that I got, like, a year ago from Georgia. So yeah. Now I have more folktale books. I have way more up there. But I'll get through all of them eventually, maybe one day.
Perfect.
So where can people find your show, Sarah?
Anywhere that you listen to podcasts. You know, just like anywhere. YouTube, Spotify, yep. All the others, Apple.
Yeah, and thank you all for joining us. Sarah, thank you for
coming on for this
little, like, quick chat. It was nice to chat with you again.
Yeah.
And yeah, so everyone, Marwa do nakhmandis, and see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. See you.
To connect with us, feel free to find us on social media under @history_Georgia or on Facebook at The History of Sacramento, Georgia. To help this podcast continue, please feel free to subscribe to our Patreon or donate via Ko-fi or PayPal. The links are in the episode description. If you would prefer donating something a bit more tangible, we also have an Amazon wish list for you to peruse. The best way to help us is via review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast host, as it goes a long way with getting the word out about the show and helping us reach new people to learn about Georgia. Madlaba the Nakfamdis, and thank you for listening to The History of Sacketville, Georgia. See you next time.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East, the very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalla, on my podcast, The Conqueror's Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.